everyone, and welcome to Minute 42 of Season 7 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick, Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Niall McGowan of the Bat-Minute. Welcome back, Niall.
Hey, Rob. Oh, very, very, very happy to be here. Squeezed into this van with with you, McClane, and like seven other people.
That's right. and a guy who we don't know who he is. Yeah, so we'll have wins.
Yeah, and then he gets this nice big spacious seat in the back, like a couple of rows behind everyone else. Everyone's all crunched in together. And it's like, and he's been like, no. You have to let me hang back and be cool from a distance. But we'll get to him.
We'll get to him. All right, so minute 42 begins with Cross continuing his cross and ends with John wanting some answers.
I have to say, though, too, because we started the last minute with so much Alfred talk, Batman talk. Got to say, Walter, one pair of glasses away from being the perfect Commissioner Gordon. Like, look at him. Look at that guy. Like, how did he not get that part back in the day? Like, I know Pat Hingle had a stranglehold on it in the 90s, but, like, if I was recasting things for Batman and I saw Die Hard with a Vengeance, I was like, just put a pair of glasses on this dude. There you go. It's Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. I definitely think you're right. He was a little busy at the time because he's the actor who plays him was on a soap opera. I think it was One Life to Live. I'm trying to remember which soap opera. Yeah. But he had like thousands of episodes, And yeah. I don't know how they somehow decided to to cast him against type and put him here. Larry Brigman. That was his name. But there's...
It's just so... maybe it's just my attitude, too. Like, but if I had a steady job on a soap opera, I would be very content. Be like, well, this is all I'm doing. Like, now I could just enjoy my life. But then to be all like, oh, no, I'm going to go out and... do you want to be in a Die Hard movie? Like, I'm assuming he had to audition. Unless they just came out...
I have absolutely no idea. He was on 1,431 episodes of As the World Turns. From 1969
to 2010. God damn. Like, that is an impressive, like, maybe he just wanted to do something different. Like, it was just a thing of, like, just get me any other job.
That's right.
Because, I've been doing this for 25 years at this point.
Already. Yeah, I'm playing a doctor. So, let me do something else. I don't want to be a doctor. So they make him a chief inspector.
Yeah. Inspector.
Yeah.
I'm going to get that to, like, the that's for later minutes. We'll get there. We'll get to that one.
Right. So basically, we ended things yesterday with Andrew Cross starting to ask John question after question, trying to figure out if he knows who these people are. Who is it that's after him? And today he continues with those, and he basically says to him, "Did you notice any cars following you?" And he goes, "No. Anybody following you at all? Any kind of surveillance, telephone, house, anything unusual at all?" And, I mean, first of all, these questions are crazy questions. Again, you're asking a seasoned cop if he noticed that somebody has put tabs on him. That's what it comes down to.
It's just that, and you're like, well, how far back are you wanting, like, today that I noticed this? when I was running through, when I was crashing through Central Park in that taxi, that I noticed that there was another car following
him. It was Walsh. No, I didn't see Walsh was following it.
but yeah. I think it has that. It's broader. It's like ebbing into comedic as well. Like, as they keep going, it's just McClane's face because he just looks so
well. Because McClane realizes like how stupid these questions are, and so he gives a McClane-esque response and says, "Well, now that you mention it, I have experienced a burning sensation between my toes. I thought it was just some athlete's foot or something. I don't know."
The classic McClane.
Completely. Yeah. And what I love is that when he's being cross-examined by Cross, he takes his hand and he, like, I don't know if he bites his hand or if he is... he's not biting his nails, even though it's close to biting his nails. It's like he's picking at the skin on his hand, basically showing that I'm pretty bored here.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like he's trying to take off like a, what do they call him? Again, going into, what do you call those, like the Rich Hall things? Springlets? Is that what they're called? Sniglets. But yeah, you know, I grew up my entire life, you know, when you have like a little thing by your nail, a little bit of skin that's sticking out when you're biting your nail, and there's still a little bit left. And I, for years, never knew what the term for that was, and then found out it was a hangnail. And I was like, oh, there you go. But yeah, to find out.
I know, I thought you were going to say what there's a term for biting the hangnail. I thought that's where you were going.
Yeah. No. I grew up not even knowing that that was called a hangnail. And then finding out, like, no, people have created a term for this. Like, there's a term for everything. If you have experienced it, someone else is gone, we'll call that's it right. this. And then some of them just are so obscure that you just don't catch on to them until you're like 25 years old.
Right. Well, do you know that there are other names for biting your nails? Like technical names.
Yes. Really? No.
I'm probably not going to pronounce it.
Because I remember
probably not going to.
No, this is good. Because I remember back in the Godfather minute, those guys, when there's a bit where James Caan, after he discovers that like his sister's been beaten up, he starts like gnawing on his fist. And I remember they discovered that apparently that's like there's an actual condition about like being addicted to eating your own skin and stuff like that that they got into.
Yes, we're about to get there.
Oh, well, here we go then.
The official term for nail biting is onychophagy. I don't even know how to onychophagia. Hagia, something like that. It's the oral it's an oral compulsive habit of biting one's fingernails.
Yeah. I don't think and those things are like they become nightmarish at times. And too, you have like things like, you know, trichotillomania, yeah, where people literally pull out every hair in their head and things like that. Yeah, so I can imagine it doesn't sound like much, but then you imagine if you had that, and then you could possibly really, really destroy yourself by doing that. Really,
right. Like skin biting is called the dermatophagia, and skin picking is excoriation disorder. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there are a number of different things here. It's, you know, that are connected to this. Now, what percentage of children do you think bite their nails?
Oh, it must be like insanely high. It must be like 80% or something.
Apparently, it's only 25 to 35%.
Really? Holy moly! Oh, that's on every kid. It's like a thing that you just do until you learn not to do it. Like, it's just an inbuilt thing in people.
Yeah. Did you? Are you part of that 35%?
Oh yeah.
Bite your nails as a kid?
Like, I never even like, because I've never really done all that much damage to myself in terms of like, you know, chewing nails and stuff like that. But like, I know people who have like, they go out and get the gel to put over their hands, you know, so then when you try to do it, your hands taste bad and stuff like that. So kind of to stop you from doing it. But yeah, I bite my nails all the time. I know it's a thing society says you shouldn't do. But then a lot of the time I'm like, well, why not? Like, what's the, I understand why not when it gets into like, yeah, some people can end up completely destroying their hands and stuff. But I'm right. Thinking, oh, like a little, you know, and, you know, when you're sitting in the office, kind of like, oh, just chewing on your nails thing. I don't mind that. That's fine by me.
Okay. I used to bite my nails till the age of 23, and then my girlfriend at the time somehow got me to stop it. I can't even remember how she got me to stop it, but maybe she just said stop doing it. I could have been just.
I think one of the reasons, because I know
the things we do when we're in love.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So, but I have a friend who's he's only recently sort of acquiesced to looking in whether he has like anxiety issues or ADHD, and it was just a notable thing for me, because he always has like red, like basically he not so much chews his nails, but he chews his hand, and like you'll come in and you'll see like he's pulled bits of skin off and everything, so there's big red marks on his hand all over, like proper, like he's broken the skin and stuff, and he's just like, yeah, I need to really need to stop doing that. And then yeah, there's a comedian I follow through Instagram called Marilyn Robertson, and then I managed to see her do stand up live recently, and I know she has all the same kind of things on her hands. So I was just like, oh, if I was to talk to her afterwards, I would have been like, do you chew your hands by any chance? Like, is that like a nervous thing that you do or anything? But I never found out though, because she just, you know, zoomed off stage straight afterwards, so didn't reappear. But
Well, if you follow her on Instagram, you can write to her and say, "Do you have what did you call it? Trey. Oh no, that was pulling out hairs. The
Oh yeah, trichotillomania is the hair one. I know that.
trichotillomania.
I know
Right.
that one pretty
So
well.
right, dermatophagia.
But that,
Yeah.
but I don't
So
know where that,
you
this is
know.
going to come out of nowhere. But do you have this? And if you don't know, look into whether you have this or not.
Yeah. All right. And I don't know if John has that. Maybe he's pulling off a bandage or something like
I
that.
think this just seems more of like he just wanted something to do because he is just like he's getting fed up with these guys and he's just like, oh, it's literally like he'd start picking his nose almost at this point just to be like, I just want out of this van, man. Like, or for you to
Right.
get your damn point. Like, what is this?
That's right. And then they give us a shot of the guy sitting in the back. We don't know who he is still not talking. And then they continue and they say, "We read your jacket, Lieutenant. We were told you'd be
Yeah,
cooperative."
just
With cooperate with what?
that line though is just so like it's so movie cop. I don't know if, like, if that's an actual term in real life though, but it just sounds like, oh, when you're a cop in a movie, you say things like, "We read your jacket, lieutenants," and you're like, "What the hell's a jacket? Like, what is it? Just like we read your file or whatever, or we read your history."
That's right.
But then to call it a jacket is like, oh, that's a cool movie cop thing though. Like, I don't know if they do that in reality, but. To make it
Correct.
seem like it's more badass and cool than they actually are, we call it a jacket.
That's right. I think the jacket is because it's the outer layer, like the basically, I think when they said they have to read your jacket, they read the highlights. I think that's the idea.
Yeah, this is me
We
saying
didn't
like,
go
oh,
into
it
every
sounds so
little thing
badass
about
and
it.
cool, and then it's like we're just referring to the Manila folder that the paper is.
That's right. That's right. What we did was we just went through the cliff notes of John McClane's career.
Yeah,
That's
yeah. There's another term you would have dealt with earlier too that I didn't know existed prior to seeing this film. But like, yeah, the when the guy says to Zeus, like, "Oh, what's your medallion number?" When he thinks he's a
right.
cabbie, I was like, "Oh, that sounds so cool and badass." For like, "Oh, a cabbie has a medallion number" and stuff like this.
That's
Whereas
right.
you say they'll be like, "Well, what's your registration number?" or whatever like that. But then it's called like, "Oh, what's your medallion number?"
Yeah, we talked about that, about how much a medallion costs and things like that. Yeah, for sure.
No.
And
Yeah.
but again, it's funny that we were told you would cooperate. Who told them that he was going to cooperate? Like, who did they get in touch with that? Because Cobb is running the whole thing, and Cobb is the one here who, he also starts he finally sticks up for John a little bit.
Yeah.
Where he says
Although I
that,
do
wait a
think that
minute, he will be.
Yeah, I also don't think the cop would have referred to John as being cooperative. Like prior to this
No,
scene, they'd ask him about it, and
not
out
at
of the blue,
all.
he'd be like, "No, he's an asshole. Like he's a pain in my butt." And like, no, he would
That's
be.
right.
But yeah, Cobb
Yeah,
himself
no,
is
it's a
so
little
flabbergasted.
strange.
He's just sitting with a real look of like he also is like, "What is happening? Like what is going on here?" Like it's
That's
he's
right.
as out of the loop as anyone. Like maybe do you think they went to Powell? They ringing up Al Powell? I'm like, "You know John McClane?" Like, "Yeah, I know." "Do you think
He'll
he'd
be
be cooperative?"
cooperative.
"Oh, John's the best. Of course he's going to help you out." Yeah.
That's right. Where's Reginald Bill Johnson when you need him?
Yeah. And they're like, "Should we ring his wife to confirm?" Like, "No, we don't need that." So he rang up
No, I
all
don't
these
think
people.
she's going to agree.
Dear God, no, he will be the least cooperative man you will ever meet.
Yeah, probably. And then Cobb then says, "You want to share information? How about sending a little our way as well?"
I'm just gonna the harken back though, because it only just occurred to me as well. Harkening back to mentioning Michael Christopher being in Fallout last minute. Of course, the main character of Fallout is called Lucy McClane. So hey, everything is connected, you know? Because like yeah,
Wow.
whenever she pop like they call the actress in it, the one from Yellow Jackets. But every time she would say, "I'm Lucy McClane," I would just imagine that little girl going like, "I'm Lucy. This is Lucy McClane."
Lucy McLean speaking.
Yeah. And then it goes going too like, "Oh, it's Mary Elizabeth Winstead as well." But like, oh, you're
That's
not there
right.
yet.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. I never saw the show, so I wouldn't know it, but that's great.
Oh, it's worth a watch just to see if just to, then you can go in and check if there's any other Die Hard connections in there with the prior knowledge. You know?
You never know. There might be. And then John says, "We're wasting time in We're wasting time here in this goddamn van." And then the response that they get from Cross is, "Look, we want to hear what he knows first. What the hell? You give us pictures, and then you look. We want to hear what he knows first. Hey, I know as much as you know. All right, there's a guy out there setting off bombs. He calls himself Simon. He speaks with a German accent, and for some reason, he's very angry with me." Yeah. Now maybe you, and then he gets cut off.
Yeah. This again though, McClane in himself going through that now, breaking it down like that is like he speaks with a German accent and he's very pissed off.
Oh wait a second.
Like wait, no, I did know a German guy actually. Yeah.
Like, is he connected in some way?
Like I killed a bunch of them.
That's right. Yeah, you know what? It could have been any of them. It could have been maybe this is Carl's brother. You know, it doesn't have to be Hans.
He's like to Carl. He's like, oh, like it's Hans Gruber's brother. It's like Hans. Oh, that one. Oh, okay. Oh no, I thought it was like the Fabio looking guy. No, sorry.
Oh, well, Franco. It was Franco.
But some of them it turned out it was Franco, and it's just like, which one was Franco? It's like. I was like, oh, yeah, he was one of the guys when you threw down the plastic explosive down the elevator. Like, oh, right, one of those guys. Oh, didn't even really meet that guy. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's pretty funny the way that they, that you can ask that question now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but I guess it just wouldn't have worked in their script to say that right away. That if John would have been able to figure it out. Because I think part of the idea here is to surprise the audience also.
Yeah, yeah. But then I wonder if people going into it with like how much in the promotion of Die Hard with a Vengeance where they plug in like it's the vengeance of the title is the Grubers are back and they're getting revenge on John McClane and stuff. So
I don't think
people might have gone in already knowing fine rightly who Simon was.
Right. I don't think so. From what I recall when I saw this in the theater, you didn't know anything about it. You didn't know that there was any connection.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you had to wait 42 minutes or 43 minutes into the movie to figure it out. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think even, like, as I recall, any poster I've ever seen of Die Hard with a Vengeance, I don't think they feature Jeremy Irons. Like, they don't even try to give you that giveaway of, like, that's who's on the phone. It's just like, yeah, if you go in, it's literally like, I don't know who. Nowadays, you would know who that voice is because it's Jeremy Irons. But way back then, you could have been like, yeah, this is literally. Although maybe for some people, big fans of like Dead Ringers or whatever, were just like, of course I recognize that voice. But
The fact that he had just won an Oscar a few years before.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Playing Klaus Von Bülow. Yeah.
It's not like, or be I like mean, in, you know, Phone Booth, the Joel Schumacher movie with Colin Farrell. And then they have like on the phone
where they completely change who's on the phone.
Yeah, yeah. But then they have like as you're watching the movie, you're just like, okay, that's Kiefer Sutherland's voice. I know Kiefer Sutherland's voice. I guess that's who that is. And then they try to do a fake out. I'm like, oh, we found the guy. And as soon as they show you who it is, you're like, well, that's not Kiefer Sutherland. So I know there's going to be a twist where he's actually still out there and stuff. Because he got way too recognizable a voice on that phone for that twist to work.
Well, I remember the same thing happened with Saving Private Ryan. Like, I knew that Matt Damon was playing Private Ryan. So when he has the scene, you know, where he meets the wrong Private Ryan, you know, the one played by, do you know who plays the wrong Private Ryan?
Is it Nathan Fillion?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's right. So I knew right away. I was like, okay, that's not him.
Although nowadays, like maybe back in the 90s, you would have been like, oh, that's not him. But nowadays, you're like, oh, my God, it's Nathan Fillion. Like,
that's
what are you doing here?
That's right. So, yeah, no, it's just, it's nowadays, as you said, they ruin everything in the trailer. So I try and avoid trailers as much as possible.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's very few like things where, like, unless it's like if it were a Batman trailer, I would check it out because I'd be that into it. But anything else, if I'm already pre-sold. Like, I just have to give me, like, something that came out recently, like Love Lies Bleeding. I just seen what the pitch was. I was like, it's from the maker of St. Maud, it's Kristen Stewart, and this lady, and they're lesbian bodybuilding couple, and it's a kind of weird crime thing. I was like, sold. That's all I need. You don't need to show me anything else about this, you know. And then sometimes you get annoyed when you're in the theater and they just bombard you with trailers and you're just like, I don't want to know. I don't want to know. I don't want to know.
That's right. Especially the big ones, you know, and then the good thing is the big ones come out months before the movie comes out. So you can hopefully, you know, just forget everything about what you saw in the trailer months later.
The most upsetting one recently was for Abigail, which is NFL. Cause I love the Abigail so much. And the entire way through is like, I wish I didn't know what the twist was, like, because they show you what the twist doesn't happen in the film until like 40 minutes in, and then like that's the rest of the film then, to be fair. But also it's in the trailer, it's like you didn't have to tell people what was going on. Like, it would have been much more intriguing to be like, well, what's going to happen next and stuff. But the whole time you're sitting there going, well, I know where this is going because you told me your entire marketing campaign was based around this thing, the thing you shouldn't be telling people. So every time I pitch the movie now to people, they're like, oh, what's it about? And I'm like, just watch it. Like, okay, just trust me when I say it's good, and it's better that you don't know what it's about and stuff.
Oh, wow. It reminds me of Terminator Genesis. You know, I didn't see the trailer beforehand, and so I was generally surprised when the big twist came around. And then I said that to a friend of mine, and he's like, what do you mean? Everyone knows that that's what it is because that was in the trailer. I'm like, what, are they that stupid that they would put that in the trailer? You know, and then I watched the trailer after watching the movie, and I'm like, oh my God, they just ruined everything.
Yeah. I guess maybe the marketing people are like, we need something, a new edge to get people in. Maybe if they knew this was the angle we're coming at, that'd get people excited. And it's like, you should be, you know, if the Terminator brand itself should be enough, you know, like it should be enough to get people to go like, you know, do you remember that's Terminator 2? Right. It's pretty good. Why don't we just have more of that? But then that's commonly the problem with the new Terminator films is that, like, they inevitably just become remakes of Terminator 2 specifically. Correct. So, but yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, they keep giving us shots of this guy in the back. You know, we don't really know who he is.
Is this the guy in Homer's Lawn is like, but Marge, look at that little guy. He's not done anything yet. You know, he's just standing there. But you know, when he does, it's going to be good.
Exactly. And I mean, I like the fact that John is willing to speak his mind here. Mm-hmm. You know, he has no trouble saying to these guys in the van, look, you know, there's something going on here. I want to know what's going on. Explain it to me.
Yeah,
you know, because you see their hesitation, even though they constantly are saying, "Okay, we just want to hear what you know first." But I don't know anything. So how do you expect me, you know, to tell you anything if I don't know anything? I want to hear from you. Let's work together. Mm-hmm. You know, that type of thing. It's nice to show the way that John pushes back on them in order to get some information that or some well-needed information, basically, for this type of thing.
Yeah. It also, too, like, it must be this the frustration as well of, like, these guys coming in with all their vagaries. And then to be like, I'm so involved in this that, like, I literally had a bomb blow up right behind me. Like, just within the last, like, 15 minutes or so, I nearly died because of this goddamn, like, you tell me what the hell is happening right now, because I've spent my entire morning running around New York or then driving through Central Park and nearly killing people.
I think he had fun doing that. I think John had fun doing that.
I was like, that was a little personal bonus for me. I didn't actually have to go through Central Park at all. But, so many memories. I'm sure you probably talked about it during that scene, but like that was all the early 2000s with the dawn of the PlayStation and the Die Hard trilogy game, and then the game of Die Hard with the Avengers just being driving the cab or driving, you know, vehicles, and then just like the fact that you could adjust the gore in the settings, so whenever you hit someone the entire windshield was just covered in blood and stuff.
Oh wow.
Did you ever play it back in the
day? No, never played it.
Oh wow.
I'm not much of a gamer.
I'm not much of a gamer either, but back then my parents got me a PlayStation. That was one of the few games I had. It was great. It was obviously the three separate games, and then the second one's a first person shooter, and then the first one's I don't know what way. I'm sure people more up in gaming lingo will know what to call it. But yeah, the third one was just driving around, and yeah, it was the amount of little sound bites they had in, because they had a guy who did a pretty good Bruce Willis impersonation, and then the guy doing Zeus didn't sound a goddamn thing like Samuel L. Jackson. But like, you'd just be zooming around and you just hear, are you aiming for these people? Like every couple of seconds, we're gonna die. And then whenever you completed the level, you got a guy coming and going, you surprise me again, my clan. possibly doing a better Jeremy Irons impression than I do, but a sort of iffy Jeremy Irons impression coming in there on top of everything. It was a great game. I would highly just recommend just going and looking at some YouTube footage just to see what it was, because you could turn down the gore so when you hit people nothing happened, or you could turn it way up so when you hit someone literally the entire windscreen was covered in blood,
like in RoboCop.
yeah, and so at that point you'd be like, wouldn't they just arrest McClane? He must have killed like
that's right
70 people by now.
Interesting. All right, so I mean that's all I have for this minute. Do you have anything else?
Yep, not for this minute. That's all I got. All right. I was waiting for the photos again, because I did have some Targo and some Sam Phillips material, but yeah. I think that might be next minute.
It's not today.
Not today.
Yeah, it'll be tomorrow. We'll talk about them. So basically, as I mentioned yesterday, this whole minute doesn't appear in the script, so we have nothing to talk about with the script. So every Tuesday, we have a segment called Trilogy Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five movie trilogies, which, I use the term very loosely. It can be a movie that has more than three movies in it, but... I mean, you should only be looking at the three movies.
This got me into a very nitpicky rabbit hole, because you sent me a link to the Wikipedia that was just like, these are film trilogies. And some of the examples they had in there, I was like, that's not a trilogy. What are you talking about? Like, they would literally go in. No, that's three separate films that are all called Black Christmas. Like, that's nothing to do with that. A trilogy is like an ongoing story. Like, it's, there's a set of three films. Like, it's not, two remakes to one film.
What I sent you is a suggestion. You can use it, you can do it however you want.
Yeah.
All right.
And also, too, when I was trying to formulate mine, I was just like, I'm going to just cast out Star Wars and cast out Lord of the Rings, because we know everyone's going to say those. they're what's the best movie trilogy? It's like, well, obviously the original Star Wars trilogy and the Lord of the Rings trilogy. But so I've not counted those in my list, because it's just like, no, it's too easy. They're sort of, they're freebies, basically.
Okay. So what have you got for us?
Well, I'll put down Back to the Future as well. Obviously, again, ongoing story. They knew enough of being a trilogy that they obviously made two of them at the same time. And then the fact that it's still, as of time of recording, it is still stands as a trilogy. Like, Die Hard isn't a trilogy, technically. They used to have the Alien trilogy and stuff back in the day, and then they just go and what was the Indiana Jones trilogy? I would say was a perfect trilogy that had a proper ending and everything.
Yeah.
And then they ruined it. That's right. Two more. But Back to the Future, thankfully, is just like, nope, they had the sense to go, we did this thing, and we went out in a high. And as to this day, we have not revisited that, except in the cartoon they made.
Which doesn't count.
Then, follow up with Bill and Ted, which is, for the majority of my life, was not a trilogy. And then when they brought it back, I was just like, these things never work when you come back to a property 25 odd years later and then try to we'll make a new one. But yeah, somehow then, because Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure grew up, loving that. Bogus Journey, I loved even more, even though I know people now have turned against it.
Interesting.
Yeah, William Sanderson as Death is one of my favorite characters of all time. And I just love how genuinely strange it is as well as a film. And then, the comeback all that time later, but you're going to mess this up, guys. And then they did Bill and Ted Face the Music. I was like, no, that was great. I really, really love that. So yeah, I'll put down the Bill and Ted trilogy. Then I'll put in I'll put in some heavy hitters here. Put in the Dollars trilogy, the Sergio Leone, Clint Eastwood one. Mostly like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is one of my all-time favorite films. So it's mostly in there for that. But again, it does work as an odd trilogy unto itself. Right. But then some people go like, isn't Clint playing the man with no name who always has a name in the films? So then you could apply it to like High Plains Drifter is also part of that trilogy if you want, because it's just like, yeah, but he's playing the same character, isn't he?
Yeah.
But no, I'll put down the Dollar trilogy. And then I'll throw in a little off the beaten track. I'll throw in Ginger Snaps, the Ginger Snaps films. Big horror movie guy. The first Ginger Snaps is like an all-time classic, undisputed. But then, yeah, the two sequels were both – the third one's not as good. But Ginger Snaps too, and a lot of their own strengths. So I'll put that in there too, to just to highlight. Yeah, are you familiar with the Ginger Snaps movies at all, Rob?
Not familiar at all. I'm not a horror person. I generally stay away from horror.
It was not your wish.
No, not at all. Yeah. Okay. And what is your number one?
Number one, kind of the writing's on the wall for me, basically. But I've had to put it again. It does stand as a trilogy, but I have to put down the Dark Knight trilogy, basically, because I was a big Batman fan over here. I can't count the ones that we've covered so far, because those aren't a trilogy. You know, Batman, you have the Burton movies, you got two Burton movies, you got two Schumacher movies. There's no trilogy in there. So I think even on that Wikipedia list, they did try to put it down. It's like, no, it's not. It's not. But, you know, as much as I bemoan the fact that Chris Nolan went and structured it as a trilogy, because I thought he did such a good job in the first two films establishing it as an ongoing lore. Like, it really, at the end of Batman Begins, you go like, yeah, it's all just starting now. It's going to be the rest of this guy's life is going to be doing all this crazy crap. And then the end of The Dark Knight has the Joker literally saying, you and I are destined to do this forever. And you're like, that's right. It's going to be like an ongoing, you know, omnipresent story. The third one, to come back with the third one and be like, actually, no, here it is. It's all neatly wrapped up at the end of three of them. it sticks in my craw a little bit. But after just appreciating it, like, no, it is now as a trilogy structured. No, I think it is. It's excellent work with the beginning, middle, and end. Yeah, there's three. Obviously, people are a bit harsher on The Dark Knight Rises. I still think it's a great movie for the most part. The other two, they're just all three films are such high quality, and they do all in a roundabout way, which I don't think was originally intended. They do tell a complete, you know, three act structured story. I'll tip my cap to Chris Nolan for that one. So that'll be me.
All right, excellent. So, Nat, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
Well, speaking of Batman, you can hear me talking about all the Batman films over on Batminute, which you can get through all good podcatchers. We're on Facebook in the Batminute Listeners Cave, and we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, all that stuff. We're currently working on a little mini-season on the Batman Beyond film, Return of the Joker, which will be coming out sometime this year as well. Actually, at this point, if this is airing at the end of June, it'll be out already. We will be currently airing that too. You type in Batminute into a Google search engine, we'll come up.
All right, very cool. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, or you can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movieroundminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Marching home again, hurrah, hurrah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hurrah, hurrah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.